Jacob Brown.
Okay, and who's going to be Mr. Brown? One of Ms. Rittenhouse is going to conduct your hearing at this time.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Good afternoon. Could you please state your full name and your ABC number for the record?
Dean Jacob Brown, DOC number 152122.
Thank you, sir. We are here before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a revocation hearing concerning the six allegations that are on your warrant. And you were notified about this hearing on December 19th, and you signed a form that day. Do you remember signing that form?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. On that form is a list of your hearing rights. And one of your rights is that you could hire at your expense an attorney to represent you. Did you hire an attorney today, sir, or will you represent yourself?
I will represent myself.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing. If you look to your right, so the opposite end of the bench for me, you have at the end the Honorable Louis Quinones, next to him the Honorable David Neal. Right next to me here in the middle is our board chairman, the Honorable Dr. C.T. White. My name is Gail Rittenhouse. I will conduct your hearing today. We also have in the room with us, and you'll see him in a moment, the Honorable Mr. Grady from Department of Corrections. He'll represent the department and your parole officer in the hearing today. So I need to swear to both of you in, and I believe you may have, does he have some supporters?
Yes, he has supporters.
I see the sheet right over there. And there's another one. Is there?
I don't think he's on that one.
There's the other sheet right there. I see it right there. Okay, that's this outrage. Okay, I see you have some supporters in the room. We have Ms. Lopez, okay, and Mr. Estorga, is that right? Oh, I got it, okay. Okay, and that is, I think, all. People are having a hard time reading, but handwriting. In the room. Are you two going to speak today?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Then I need to swear all four of you in. So, Mr. Brown, Mr. Grady, Mr. Estorga, and Ms. Lopez, do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so? Mr. Brown?
I do.
Okay, Mr. Estorga?
I do.
And Mr. Ms. Lopez, I'm sorry?
I do.
And Mr. Grady?
I do.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Brown, your hearing will be conducted in two phases, with phase one to determine if you violated the terms and conditions of community supervision, and then phase two to determine if your supervision should be reinstated or revoked. So, Mr. Brown, I'm going to read each one of these allegations to you, and as I read each one, I'll ask you to respond whether the allegation is true or false. If you believe the allegation's false, then I'll take testimony from Mr. Grady from the Department of Corrections, and the board will consider whether you violated the condition. Okay, sir? So we will start phase one, and I'll read the first allegation to you, and it is that you were in violation of condition number two, as demonstrated by your failure to follow the directives of your assigned parole officer by failing to report in for a face-to-face contact visit on or about November 15th, 2018, as verbally directed on October 25th, 2018. Mr. Brown, is this true or false, sir?
This is true.
True? Okay, sir.
Yes.
Okay, we'll go to allegation number two. And the allegation is that you were in violation of condition number five, as demonstrated by the possession of glass pipes commonly utilized to ingest illicit substances on or about November 16th, 2018. Mr. Brown, is this true or false?
This would be false.
False, okay.
Yeah.
Tell you what, I'm going to finish all the allegations and then I'll take the testimony from Mr. Grady. Okay, so the third allegation is that you were in violation of condition number eight, as demonstrated by your contact with any current or past victim, comma, Judy Baldonado Lopez, on or about November 16th, 2018. Mr. Brown, is this true or false?
True.
True? Okay.
Yeah.
Allegation number four is that you were in violation of condition 12H, as demonstrated by your operating any motor vehicle without permission from your assigned parole officer on or about November 16, 2018. Mr. Brown, is this true or false?
True. This is true.
True, okay. Allegation number five, in violation of condition number 13P, as demonstrated by your failure to refrain from possessing, purchasing, or owning any children's books, toys, clothing, or etc., on or about November 16th, 2018. Mr. Brown, is this true or false?
False.
False, okay. So number two and five. Allegation number six is that you were in violation of condition 13C, as demonstrated by your failure to refrain from having any form of contact with any victims of your current or previous offenses on or about November 16, 2018. Mr. Brown, is this true or false?
True.
True. Okay, so for allegations number two and five, I'm going to take testimony from Mr. Grady. So, Mr. Grady, would you please give us testimony on, allegation two, which is on the third page of the warrant. Number two and five.
Allegation number two, on 9/11 of 2018, the offender was released from ACDC Florence, South Unit, on TLS status. The offender was transported by ADC to Phoenix Electronic Monitoring Unit for his initial intake. The Arizona condition of supervision were explained to the offender. The offender read, acknowledged, and understanding, and they were signed by the offender. A copy of the signed condition was given to the offender. On 11/16/2018, P.O. Verge and P.O. Adams made unscheduled face-to-face contact with the offender as a Boone resident, located at 7102 North 55th Avenue, Glendale, Arizona 85301. The offender was asked if there were any contraband or illegal items in the offender's room. The offender stated no. A visual inspection of the offender's room was conducted by P.O. Adams. A glass water pipe, commonly utilized for ingesting illicit substances with burnt residue, was observed on the top of a plastic dresser in the offender's bedroom. Parole supervisor freshman P.O. Philip P.O. Herrera arrived at the residence. A further search of the offender's room was conducted. Inside the plastic dresser, that contained the offender's clothes, four other glass pipes with burnt residue were found hidden and wrapped in tissue paper and clothing. Let me know that through training experience, the pipes and baggies are consistent with the illicit drugs used, considered drug paraphernalia. In addition, three small Ziploc baggies were located in the dresser with the glass pipes. One of these baggies contained a small amount of unknown white powdery substance. The glass pipes and the unknown powdery substance were turned over to the Arizona Department of Corrections Criminal Investigations Unit. Follow-up number two. The offender was advised that what was discovered in the dresser during the search, the offender stated the drug paraphernalia belonged to his daughter, who moved into the residence about a week ago. The offender stated she had a drug problem and he was trying to help her, so he took the item away from her a few days ago. When asked why did he destroy or throw the items out, the offender stated he was supposed to go through the trash.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. So, Mr. Brown, what's false about that allegation?
Well, I think the allegation of the drug paraphernalia, to my knowledge, I did not know they were within my bedroom premises. My daughter moved in within a week. She turned 18, she went from foster care, and she came to me. So it's basically kind of new, a whole new thing for me. I did not know what was going on in her life. It was very spotty from what I knew what was going on with her.
Mr. Brown, we just need to know about the pipes. The pipe that was found, one of which was in plain sight in your room, and the others that were hidden in the drawer. And Mr. Grady's testimony indicated that you had taken them away from your daughter. So it suggests that you did know that they were there.
Yes.
So what's not true about this allegation, sir?
I had taken them and given them to my fiancée, at which time I tended to the problem at hand with my daughter bringing that stuff into the household. So I did not know where the stuff went.
Mr. Brown, there was one in plain sight on your dresser.
Yes. At that time, there was, during that night, there wasn't none. So I did not know where they went. Oh. I had to deal with my daughter.
Okay.
All the attention was on her.
Okay, Mr. Brown, we're going to move on to allegation number 5. I'm going to take some testimony from Mr. Brody on allegation number 5. If you would please.
Number 5 starts off the same as number 2.
Okay.
The only difference is further search of the offender's room was conducted. 3 replica toy revolvers type handgun were located in the offender's room on full staff. The offender is prohibited possessor for possessing any type of toy while on community supervision. Follow up. In addition to the toy replica, a realistic black CO2 BB pellet handgun was also located in the defender's room. A full face ski mask was also located, and through the ski mask is not specific for violation. It leads credence to the possibility that the offender has and plans to commit some type of armed robbery.
Thank you, Mr. Grady. So, Mr. Brown, that's not true about the allegation number 5, which was your failure to refrain from possessing, purchasing, or owning any children's books, toys, clothing, etc.
When I moved into my room, it was partly furnished, and my fiance was bringing a lot of stuff in from storage. The ski mask and the toys and stuff like that, I did not know they were there at that time. They were on their way to be removed the next day, which was a Saturday, during the yard sale.
Okay, Mr. Brown, we also have attached to the warrant photographs of the replica guns, the ski mask, and the glass pipes. So I just want to make note of that. I'm going to make a motion. I'm going to move this hearing from phase 1 to phase 2, sir. And my motion will be that with respect to allegations 1, 3, 4, and 6, those allegations Mr. Brown has admitted, and with respect to allegations 2 and 5, that will be based on testimony from Mr. Grady of the Department of Corrections. But I'm going to move to find that Mr. Brown was delinquent. He violated the terms and conditions of his supervision and may have lapsed or had lapsed in the criminal race or company.
Second.
Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. Motion by myself, second to Mr. Quinones. Agreed, Dr. Wright and Mr. Neal. So, Mr. Brown, we'll move to phase 2 of your hearing and determine if your supervision should be reinstated or revoked, sir. So, before we do that, I'm going to ask Mr. Grady to give us some background information. So, just stay on the phone, and we'll be right back with you in just a moment to talk with you some more. So, just remain silent. We'll be right back. Mr. Grady.
Mr. Brown was released from DOC on September 11th of 2018. He was arrested on November 16th of 2018 by parole staff. He has no new charges. He returned back to DOC on November 16th of 2018. He has a CCD of March 11th of 2020. Has no absconding days. Current conviction, 2010, aggravated assault, 3 years, 9 months. 2010, aggravated assault, 3 years, 9 months. Prior convictions. 2000, theft, 1 year. 2003, aggravated assault, 3 years, 6 months. 2007, sexual conduct with a minor, 3 years, 6 months. 2009, drive-by shooting, 7 years. 2009, misconduct involving weapons, 3 years. He has 4 terms of DOC, his CU hour scores are 3-4, mental health scores are 3, substance abuse scores are 2. Gang information, he's affiliated, the criminal street gang, Wedgewood, Chicago. Prior term of supervision, 2001, TAS release, completed 2 months. In 2005, he was released on absolute discharge. In 2007, TAS release, absconded for 142 days, arrested and revoked by the VOC. Disciplinary violations are significant with drug and violence noted. Other arrests, 1994, criminal trespass, first degree, Arizona juvenile probation. 1994, criminal damage, Arizona juvenile probation. 1995, aggravated assault, Arizona juvenile probation. 1996, aggravated assault, Arizona juvenile probation. 1996, marijuana violation, Arizona juvenile probation. 1997, criminal damage, Arizona juvenile detention. Is a criminal, is a community risk score of a G7V8.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. So back to Mr. Brown. We have a written summary of what occurred while we're on community supervision, and it looks like you were released. Originally, you had no approved placement, but then you were approved to go live with your father, right, after you were out?
Yes.
Okay, and that was at 7102 North 55th in Glendale. Were you working, sir, while you were out?
I had a job lined up, but I did not have a job per se.
Okay.
I was waiting on paperwork that I had left at DOC and the CO3 needed to mail to me. Starting from scratch, it was a little difficult, but I ended up getting it.
But you had to get like your driver's license and your social security card and that kind of stuff. Okay. Yeah, that's quite often an issue. What kind of work do you do, sir?
Usually labor work.
Like construction or what kind?
Yeah.
Construction labor?
Construction. I was in sales, sales rep,
okay.
Customer service.
Uh-huh.
Telemarketing.
Okay. So you have a lot of
skills here and there.
Okay. All right. So and it looks like you were assigned to task for drug testing. And you submitted two samples, which were negative, so that's a good thing. Had you had a drug problem in the past, sir?
I had with alcohol here and there.
Okay.
I haven't drunk in a long time, but it's been good. I've been clean, so I'm proud of myself on that note.
Okay, as you should be, because that's a good thing. Let's see, what else was I going to ask you? I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions. For anyone have a question? Okay, Mr. Brown, with your permission, I'm going to ask your supporters if they'd like to say a few words, okay? All right.
Okay.
So who would like to?
I'll come up first.
Okay, perfect. If you'd come right up and just start by stating your name.
Okay, my name's Alfred Astorga. I'm Lee Brown's father.
Okay. And
I'm actually his only parent. His mother abandoned him when he was a baby, so me and my mom practically raised him, so that's where that comes from. On these allegations on number one and all this that went down, I have to state that everything happened so quickly. On my part, I blame myself a lot of it because as far as his driving fell in my using my vehicle, I'm the one that pushed him to use it because I wanted him to go to task. I wanted him to look for a job. I wanted him to do the things right, which is on his parole duties he had to do. I didn't want him to fail. So that's on my part. As far as having toys and things of that nature. When he got out, I was there. I was the one that provided him a box that had toy cards in it and something that his aunt gave to me to give to him. So that's what I did. That's some of the things that they had found there in his room. So that's on my part. He had nothing to do with that. Also, when he had contact with his former victim, which is Desiree, the mother of his child. His daughter went to foster care at about 3 years old. We didn't really have no contact with her at all. None at all. We didn't know what kind of life she had, but the thing that he wanted for her was to be in a better place than he could give her, the things that he couldn't give her. And in the end, it turned out to be a nightmare. We thought everything was fine. When she came out, we had found out she had gone to a rehab in Tucson. We just found out about that just a week or so prior to us finding her and bringing her home, because everybody else abandoned her. Because her foster parents declared that if she didn't go fall through with the program, they were going to do nothing for her. They were going to abandon her. So we took her in. It was a lot of pressure for him, because once he found out the kind of life that she had gone through, the drugs, the assaults, everything that happened to her life, he was overwhelmed. He reached out to his aunt, to me. We didn't have the answers. We didn't know where to go. So we're dealing with her, with me, because I had a heart attack last year. He wasn't worried about me. There was just so much on his shoulders. But he tried. But he couldn't handle it. And in part, I should have been notified of what he needed to do. I would have helped him more on what he needed as far as his parole. The things that I gave him, they were a violation. I didn't know that. The thing with the car, I didn't know that. It's just the fact that so much was given to him. And after 10 years of not knowing his daughter and her coming out and being with him, trying to know him, and vice versa, it had come out like the way it should have been. I went through a lot with that myself. I can imagine what he went through. But all I can say, all these allegations that are here, there's a reason for them. Yeah, someone he did not comply with it because he couldn't. Not because he didn't want to. The only thing I would ask the board is that if you would help us, help him, help his daughter. Right now she's going back to school. She's got 3 more weeks to complete her graduation. She's doing a little bit better, but she's been to the hospital, she's been to the clinic, psychiatric, some suicidal thoughts, suicidal attempts. We didn't know how to deal with it. So I'm asking you guys, the board, if you have some way to help us, maybe, to see this through. If he's not around her to help her, she might fall through the cracks. She's right at the borderline. There'll be another victim. And we don't want that. I don't want that. So I beg you, help us, help her. And that way you help all of us. To have the life that we missed for 10 years, the life we missed with her for the last 18 years, to make us a family again. That's all I ask. Thank you for hearing me out.
Mr. Astorga, any questions for Mr. Astorga? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your patience today, too, by the way. And Ms. Lopez, did you want to? Welcome, and please state your name.
Thank you. Judy Lopez.
And what would you like to tell the board?
I'm here on behalf of Dean Brown. He is my fiancé. And I was living on the streets. He took me in. The explanation about the BB gun wasn't mine. It was in my storage. And when I went to get all my stuff out, it ended up in his room. So that was my fault. And he is a good person. He's a good person at heart. He made me understand a lot of things. He took me in from the streets. I was sleeping in my vehicle. And that was my protection, the BB gun. And as far as the ski mask, that was his dad's. He used it for work. It got caught up in his laundry. It was not Dean Brown. he's not a prisoner yet. So I asked the girl, like, please reinstate his girl, who attended getting married and in the normal life, so we want to help his daughter. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Lucas? Thank you very much for coming today.
I have some documents here that I didn't present. Can I do that now?
You may. If you give them to the board, we'll have to keep them. Do you have copies? Okay.
I did fax them.
Oh, wait. I think we have it. Is it this packet? It's this. It's photos.
Yes.
And, yeah. No, we all got a copy of it.
Okay. Do you have? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Brown, we're coming up toward the end of your hearing, but I want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement. Is there anything you've thought of that you would want the board to know without please repeating something you've already told us?
Okay, yes. I was released September 11th after 10 years. It's the longest time that I've ever served, and when I got out, the world was different to me, and step by step, I learned how to be around people. Took days. I just know that 10 years in prison, you know, it changed my outlook on a lot of things, and you know, I've been clean, been off drugs. The drug paraphernalia was my daughter's, and when I took it from her, I didn't know what else to do. And she did a suicide attempt that night, and the next day, I'm at St. Luke's Medical Center in the psychiatric ward with her, and that was the day I missed my check-in. There was a lot of stuff going on that I'm not really used to. In life, basically, a lot of new things happened. Some good and some bad. But I was glad to have them. You know, I was out for 56 days, and I was barely starting to come around to do what I needed to do with the paperwork. And I was asking my family for help, and it seemed like everything was coming together. And in 2 days, everything was just gone and was taken from me. And it was my negligence that I did not pay more attention to my terms and conditions. I know that, and it's my responsibility. I failed to do that, but I wish I would have paid more attention. I did fail to report the drug paraphernalia. A lot of these little things that I consider were not on the priority list as serious. The only thing I know was to report, to do with my POs verbally when we had our meetings. And I would always make sure I would go to my meetings. I made sure I went to task. I was drug-free. I was doing everything I could to ground myself. I had a structured house, family with support, and that's more than I've had in a long time, and I never realized how many people reached out from my family that I haven't talked to in a long time, offering me jobs and everything, but I just could not get to it because I did not have an ID or nothing. So my foot was almost to the door of starting a life. One unexpected thing was my daughter, and it was just very stressful, so many emotions and everything, and I kind of got caught up in all that. I've never had my daughter with me before. So when she shows up, and she's 18 years old on August 28th, 2019, and she shows up and comes to me, I was overjoyed. I never thought that would happen. But there's things in her life that shocked me, and I almost let it consume me for the most part. But I did not break no new laws. I maintained myself as best as I could. A lot of these things that are my violations happen within the home and not out in the community, not in the streets. And I just know that I was on the verge of creating something that I've always wanted. And if I had to sacrifice some of the things to get that way, so be it. I've heard my past being read out from a lot of the past crimes that I've committed. And it's not, it does not sound good. I admit, it's very, very bad. But I'm just asking that I be given a chance, because I feel like my chance was right there. And I was looking forward to it. I was happy. Everything that I wanted was basically right there within my grasp. And this happened right here with my parole violation. And I'm thrown back here in prison. And I realized I don't want to be here. That the stuff I accepted in prison as okay, I resent it. And my time being here has been hard, because I resent everything around me. I resent this place. I don't want to be here when before I used to accept it, because I realized there's something more out there that I want and that I would love to be a part of and to work on. And my parole officer, Mr. James Burke, he was a very, very decent parole officer. He was giving me options on jobs, and there were certain jobs that I wanted to get into through the union. And I just know that parole was helping me get established and get on my feet, get my foot in the door. I don't believe I could have really done it by myself. And I was thankful for that, because
Mr. Brown, can I ask you, did you talk to your parole officer about the problems with your daughter?
I did not at the time.
Because they are there to help you. And you have a very good parole officer, and they are there to help you.
Yes. Everything happened within 24 hours, basically. I found out my daughter was doing drugs. And I took the stuff away from her. I stripped down her room, and I handed the stuff off to my fiance. And I tried to console her, and then she lashed out at me. And that night, this happened at 9:40 at night, and 2:40 in the morning, she's trying to commit suicide.
And I'm sorry for that, sir.
My father takes her to the hospital, and then from there, she is involuntarily committed, my daughter, to St. Luke's Medical Psychiatric Care. And that's where I'm supposed to see my parole officer for
our
scheduled meeting.
Well, Mr. Brown, she's at a safe place right now, if she's there. So you should feel good about that.
Factors that play a part.
So, Mr. Brown, the board's about ready to go into discussion. And when the board's in discussion, we do all our discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. So we just ask you to stay on the phone, just remain silent, and we'll be right back with you in just a moment, sir. Okay, sir? Thank you. The board's now in discussion. Mr. Brown was, it sounds like, finally just getting to a spot where he felt good about his position, and had some unfortunate things happen to in his surroundings and that caused him to violate his conditions of supervision. And there were several. And that's what's of concern to me. It's just that if this was one small thing that might be able to be overlooked, and I almost feel like his parole officer was thinking the same thing, since the allegations, there are six allegations, and they're all of a different nature. So I am not seeing him, and as much as it pains me to say, I'm just not seeing him as a good candidate for returning to community supervision because of the multiple and different types of violations. But I would listen to any input from fellow board members on this. Any other thoughts? Okay, I'm going to make a motion then, based on information in warrant 2018W3297, information provided by Mr. Grady from Mr. Brown's supporters and our conversation with Mr. Brown. I do move to find him. I move to revoke community supervision as Mr. Brown was delinquent, violated the terms and conditions of his supervision, and had lapsed or was about to lapse into criminal ways or company, specifically by the allegations. One of the allegations is that he had drug paraphernalia in his living area and had contact with a victim of a current or former offense, in addition to other allegations. But that is my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Motion by myself, seconded Mr. Cuneo, Mr. Green, Dr. Ray, and Mr. Neal. Mr. Brown, this is certainly not what you wanted to hear, sir, but the board has voted to revoke your community supervision, sir. There are just too many violations, sir, to look past. We're showing you with a release date of March of 2020, so a little bit over a year, and you'll be out. For now, your daughter's in a safe place, and your supporters are ready to step up and handle things for you in the interim, sir. Thank you so much for being so respectful in the hearing today, and your hearing is concluded, sir. Would you give the phone back to the CO3?
All right.
Thank you, sir.
You guys have a good day.
Thank you. You too.